Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents.
If you feel depressed and if you feel anxious and you feel confused, you know what? Welcome to the club.
Gazpacho, please.
Oh my God!
What a stupid son of a bitch.
He believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Sayonara, sucker!
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Elise, how are you, darling? How was your show last night?
Oh my gosh, I'm great. I had a wonderful show for a different political podcast. Sorry.
Cheater, how dare you?
Two beers in, the Tipsy Political Roundtable is a very
They're
fun
awesome.
Podcast. And I actually got to meet Mark Levine, who is, he's not my borough president, but he is your borough president. He's the Manhattan borough president. And he's a really nice guy. And we
That's
really
lovely
hit it off.
To hear.
And I think he's my new BFF.
I stand my president.
It was actually really funny because I was coming home and Danny was texting me and he was like, how was the show? And I was like, it was amazing. I met the president of Manhattan. And he was like, what? And he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, yeah, there's a president.
He was like, okay, Elise.
Okay, cool. And I'm like, no, like Eric Adams used to be the president of Brooklyn. Now he's the mayor. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was telling you that caveat, we love that venue. I've gone to like
caveats
lots of
are great.
Caveats. The Reductress does amazing shows there. I think Hey Alma just did a cool show there. And we've been chatting with them and there might be a live sup show over the summer. I don't know what kind of medication I'm going to have to take to get through it, but I'll do it.
I'll help. I can help with that, Amanda. And also caveat is the best energy as far as like a venue. I love it. It's on the Lower East Side. Their whole thing is like they want all of their content to have like an intellectual or like thoughtful bent to it.
Oh, they made a mistake reaching out to us.
I know. Sorry. But it's a really great place.
Yeah, that's exciting.
So if people are looking for shows in the Lower East Side, I definitely check out their roster of shows because they're really great.
Definitely, if you're visiting. Yeah, it's always just like it's a good vibe. And they're a good example of a place where I can go see comedy and I'm not on edge about if somebody's going to make a joke that makes me want to leave. Like that's never happened when I've been there. And they have amazing popcorn.
They have really great popcorn, really great snacks. The staff there is really awesome. I really can't say enough good things about Caveat.
One time I went there for like a dachshund only event. It was great.
That's incredible.
I know.
Now
thank
that's
you.
That's really something.
Thanks to my Manhattan president. All right. Topic of the day. I'm just going to throw this out there, Elise. I'm just going to say, I think it's too easy for people to buy up social media platforms with global influence. I think it's too easy.
I didn't realize that it was as easy as it turns out that it'll be. It took, what, a week between
about
him
that.
having the idea and just securing the platform for $44
billion? $44 billion. And if it feels like this snuck up on you, you're not out of it. This snuck up on tech reporters. Like the actual idea of this happening seemed very remote, especially because they were in this like toxic will they or won't they for a while. It was unclear if they actually really wanted each other, but it seems like they just like threw their hands up, which reminds me of the ultimatum that I watched all weekend.
Well, it was also weird because like I wrote this in our newsletter today because I was just kind of in our markets section. I was putting this in. At first, they like the board had put in that poison pill to make it so he couldn't possibly buy it. So the 180, I guess they 180'd once they found out that he actually had like the financial backing to do what
yeah.
he was saying. But at the same time, I'm just like, the whiplash from all of it is really weird. The entire situation is weird. And honestly, Elon Musk as a person, it seems like he's just the type of guy who's like really rich and gets like a wild hair up his ass and is like, today I'm gonna go, I'm building a spaceship, I'm building a submarine, I'm building a tunnel, I'm buying Twitter, I'm putting a brain chip in a pig. And I'm like, okay, what is your job? What is your actual thing that you're working on? And also, the Tesla cars still need work. So why don't you just focus on the cars?
Yeah, his spaceship isn't, he's got some things going up there, but his spaceship, I mean, that's one thing I read today too, is like, it is like not, like one of the reasons I think Jack Dorsey left is because he was having trouble managing two companies. I'm not sure how many Elon Musk has now. I think it's like 5 or 6, but you're right. They all are dealing with a lot of government money. Like they're getting government subsidies. They want to put chips in our brains. They want to go to space. They want to like dig tunnels. They want to change all the cars. It's Gilded Age shit.
He 100%, and he is bottom of the list as far as spaceships that I'm getting on. His attention isn't. I need the person who built the spaceship that top I'm priority. On to be 100% focused on the spaceship.
You know, I'm going to say the same goes for brain chips.
And absolutely, chips in my brain, any of that stuff. I want that to be their 100% thing that they are working on.
Like, yeah, and just, we'll get to this, but it's just, there are so many people in the world. There are real free speech concerns. There are real questions that need to be answered. But the fact that this guy thinks that he is the one to answer them, it was like, I have a stomach ache every time I think about it. It's just completely, the fact that this could happen so quickly, that it could happen at all. A lot of this wealth is like, I don't know the technicals, but I'm sure most of this wealth, or the wealth that he could get these loans against, is like untaxed. Somebody gave him money to do this. I was like texting people this morning. I was like, would you give me $44 billion? Everyone said, I mean, no.
This also, just for me, I know this isn't how it actually works, but when money gets to that level, it's like all hypothetical to me. It I'm is. Like, they might as well be just exchanging little tokens. I mean, like, this one's $44 billion. I'm like, okay, I guess you exchanged that money.
Well, that's next for him. That's Dogecoin.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem like he just paid $44 billion for an enormous pain in his own ass. I don't actually hate all of his suggestions for the platform. Mm-hmm. I think just the way that it was purchased, the fact that kind of one guy can become in charge of the public square in this way, the fact that the public square actually is just a company that one guy can be in charge of, like, I think it's brought up a lot of those questions.
Right, because I did see some charts going around yesterday, just like, yes, this is unfortunately not the first time that a billionaire has, like, purchased a means of communication. Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. There are, but on a broader level, like, there are also, like, people were pointing out, like, private equity firms buy up local news places all the time. And it's just such a trend of, like, how broken things are about the way we get information. So some details. We'll touch on some follow-ups. I know you and Stanley probably talked about this yesterday, but
yes.
Twitter, of course, accepted Elon Musk's $44 billion takeover offer. If this goes through, it means the world's richest man will own one of the most influential social networks, one that often helps define the broader national and cultural discourse. This means that the company will be taken private and the board of directors goes away. Like I said, I think this snuck up on people just because that seemed so crazy. Experts were surprised that he could get this type of backing so quickly. He obviously does not have, whenever you say tax the rich, I'll be the commenter. The first commenter always says, well, he doesn't have that much in the bank. But I mean, if he can get a loan against it, then it's, you know, kind of available to him.
That's why I'm like, it's all hypothetical, like, tokens at this point. Like, okay, so it's not in the bank, but he can still buy stuff with it. So we can't tax him on the money because it's not in the bank, but he can still use the money to buy other stuff. Like, that's fake to me. That's fake. It's as fake as a Dogecoin.
Completely fake. And credit can be good. I'm sure the history of people having access to credit in this country provides lots of opportunities. But something is so fundamentally broken when this man can get a loan to buy a $44 billion company. But in New York City, and I'm sure other cities, you cannot rent an apartment unless you make 40 times the rent. And nobody's helping you with that.
Yeah, it just goes, I mean, we talk about it a lot, but like, there are just different rules for the ultra rich, and they're able to wheel and deal with each other and exchange their tokens all above our heads, while the rest of us actually have to like have real shit in the bank to back up our financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
And pay taxes. I just paid a lot of taxes.
I had to pay all my taxes. I had to pay all my city taxes, but it's okay. Manhattan president.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, Good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, so what happens next? Twitter staff, they don't know what's going to happen with their jobs. They didn't expect this either. I mean, imagine working at Twitter and knowing that this guy just bought it. Or how Musk wants to restructure the company. It seems clear that he wants to be pretty involved. Next steps do include shareholder approval and tying up some loose ends. That could take 3 to 6 months. So this doesn't happen tomorrow. Like, we're seeing a lot of people like, this might be the last day I'm on Twitter, which at least 3 to 6 months. If he decides he wants to like sweep up all the pro-union people, that's at least 3 to 6 months away.
They also must have done, we were talking about this a little bit offline, but they must have done a bot purge.
For sure.
It's very funny that, so they clearly did a bot purge like the same day that this came out. But now there are all these people being like, I've lost 2,000 followers since Elon Musk announced or whatever. I did lose a few yesterday.
We did too, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't think this is because I tweeted the video of Leah Michelle singing Don't Rain on My Parade.
You never know.
Maybe.
That really is such a nightmare. Like sometimes like my brain will misread like the following and I'll reverse two numbers. And then the way my stomach sinks and I'm like, what did we do? What did I do?
I know I did look because I, you know, I don't have notifications for people that
leave. Right?
I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't have notifications go like I don't get a notification for stuff from people I'm not following, which has brought me an immense amount of peace. But I also like frantically checked my account to be like, am I being canceled? Like,
exactly.
Did I do something wrong? I'm really sorry about the Leah Michelle video. I just think that she did a really good job in the season one finale of Glee. I'm really sorry. Yeah.
A couple months ago, like the sub account got like a wave of followers that were all just like faceless accounts with like 3 followers. So those are definitely all bots. And that's something that Elon Musk said he wanted to deal with as well, that I think is perfectly fine. But what else does Elon Musk want to do with Twitter? So he has made a lot of vague statements. Recently, he made like a TED talk or a TEDx talk recently, and he also made a statement yesterday. But he said, of course, that he wants to eliminate spammers and just more broadly promote free speech. Nobody knows exactly what he means by that, but apparently Elon Musk, as I said, is like the world's most foremost expert on free speech concerns. This whole thing is giving I alone can fix it, like Trump vibes. Yes. Like, I am the one that has to buy this up. Just like Trump was like, I have to run for president to fix this country. He's like, I have to buy this to fix it.
And it's free speech as defined by Elon Musk, one individual guy. So, you know, I do think it's I think cracking down on bots is a really good idea. I think that making the algorithm open to people is a really interesting idea, which is one of his things. I think transparency in these algorithms on social media actually is good. But at the end of the day, like, we're going to just have to wait and see how he administers this free speech policy per his understanding of what that should be and what is good and what is valuable speech to have on a platform. And like, it's basically just going to all be up to this one guy who makes some pretty weird choices a lot of
right
the time.
And his ability, like his entitlement to free speech, has already gotten him in trouble with the SEC. He is still trolling the SEC, which that's what makes me nervous, is that like he does not take the governing structures seriously. But one thing I'm trying to remember in all of this, I mean, is that our government can actually still regulate this. Like, he can't break the government's rules. Like, he has said, I will do everything that we are allowed to. But the government, as we talk about a lot in terms of Mark Zuckerberg, can sort of change what's allowed. So what he has said more broadly, he wants to keep Twitter as a free and open public square. He keeps using the term public square, and expressed he thinks that it currently has too many regulations. He sees all speech as equally valuable. He thinks it should all have a chance to bubble up, good or bad, and says Twitter, if under his direction, would only remove content, like I said, that constitutes a crime. But that's vague, and it also differs in every country, and countries can, you know, act. I mean, we know the EU is like, they're really ready to be done. They're really ready to go after social media platforms, and he's going to have to do what they say. Twitter has been seen as going farther than other platforms in minimizing dangerous speech. One of those regulations is famously the permanent suspension of former President Donald Trump after he tweeted an insurrection into existence and refused to suppress it while it was happening. So yesterday, Twitter CEO deflected questions about whether Trump would be welcome back on the platform, saying, "Ask Elon," which is gives me the shivers. When asked about this, Trump himself said that he would not be using Twitter and he would be staying on Truth Social.
That's such a Trump thing. It is very him to say that. Like, sometimes he does something so him that I'm like, "Oh, Donald." Like, obviously that's not true. If they reinstate his ban, he will be back on Twitter so fucking fast with a tweet that's like, I had an amazing conversation with Elon and he convinced me that my voice is needed back on the platform, da da da.
Right, right, right.
And something fake about how, like, actually Truth Social, he's making money on it. Like, he's not staying on Truth Social if he gets back on Twitter.
I know this was the first thing Donald Trump ever said that I think might have actually gone through like a comms team, because it was really a great opportunity to, like, I hate him, but that was a really great opportunity to promote his own app. Honestly, genius.
Well done. Get the message out there.
Some other factors here that just, as I said, give me a stomach ache when I think about it. So Tesla, another company that Musk owns, he owns so much stuff that there's so many intersections and so many potential conflicts of interest. So it's just, you think of all the people whose full-time job is going to be like just figuring out if what Elon Musk is doing is allowed. Tesla, for instance, is very dependent on China, making some wonder if that means the country can influence decision making at Twitter. I don't know how that would work out practically because Twitter is currently blocked in China. And Elon Musk, as we said, as I cannot help but repeat, owns a brain tech company called Neuralink that is making chips to implant in your brain. I just don't like that. I mean, the concept sounds maybe fine, but
I'm pretty sure it killed every single pig that he tried. They did it to a bunch of pigs and all the pigs died.
All right, Elon. Not great. Let's have PETA come after Elon Musk. He's also suggested that everybody on Twitter should be verified, which is interesting. It seems like it might be easier just to take away verification.
I think that there's something interesting to making, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, having a way that, like, you can see, like, okay, this person has verified their identity. Like, right now, verification is this weird thing of, like, a status thing for people who are maybe famous, but also maybe they're just a journalist, or maybe somebody, they just know somebody at Twitter, because I know people who've gotten verified that way.
Like, that's the main way. That's how Elon Musk did.
I mean, yeah, I do think there's a value in just a type of verification that says, like, this person is the person they are purporting to be. Like, so I don't think all his ideas are bad, but again, he keeps calling it a public square. I don't think the richest man in the world should own the public square. And another thing is, like,
yeah,
he has a lot of labor issues at Tesla and some of his other companies. How is that information going to be able to spread on Twitter? What if Tesla employees want to use Twitter to organize? You know, is that free speech that he wants to protect? Like, there are a lot of ethical questions that go into this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the point, I think his words might not have been verified, but he said he wanted to authenticate everybody. And I hadn't thought of it the way you had, which is like the discourse is a lot less toxic when you have to prove that you are a real person and you have to connect your name to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. So I do think there's a value to that. Yeah.
That just seems like such a huge, like, undertaking to confirm all of those people.
Gargantuan task.
Gargantuan. So this has made me think about, like, what has Twitter's role been in the public discourse? Because also we talk on the podcast sometimes about how sometimes the things we all get worked up about on Twitter don't actually represent what's going on in the world. It's also interesting because, like, Twitter feels huge to us, but I was surprised to read this morning it actually has only a tenth of the users as Facebook and has much less than TikTok, which I guess Twitter's, like, leaders were like, we don't know, we're not growing, the regulators are coming after us, let's just give it to this guy.
You know, that honestly might be it. I think the biggest thing about Twitter is that even though it's the smallest user base, that user base, a lot of them are in the media and a lot of them are journalists, and a lot of journalists and media personalities use Twitter to see what people are saying, to figure out what, like, they use it as kind of a...
Political leaders, too, seem to communicate primarily through Twitter.
Exactly, because it is the only text-based one. It's the only one that's not like video or photos. It's the one where you can write out thoughts. I know I've seen a lot of writers being like, this really sucks because this is the only website where I can tweet out my writing or like an article that I've written and actually have people read it. So it's not as simple for them as being like, okay, well, I'm deactivating my Twitter, because it's like, there goes how you let people know you have new or interesting thoughts to share. So it's like, even though it's the least used one, the group of people that are using it are so influential in setting the conversation that it has an outsized influence for how many people are actually on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also wonder how much of like the exodus from Facebook we've seen in the last couple of years has like even more inflated the significance. I mean, they're the people that are still on Facebook are probably going looking for their mayor on Facebook to find updates. But like, yeah, like extreme weather events, trying to figure out what's happening there, or in emergencies, what your elected leader is saying about them. It definitely has outsized influence compared to size. And I'm curious to see where that goes. Finally, now that Elon Musk owns all of our tweets, I thought we could each share which of ours we think are the most valuable. If you could make an NFT out of any one of your tweets, say that like Elon Musk gives us a grace period tomorrow, pick one tweet, it's yours.
Okay. Well, I do use an app that deletes all of my tweets after 1 year because I don't need it.
Genius.
If I could make an NFT of anyone, it would be the one where I said I had a child-free wedding that started such a controversy that I was told that my attitude is the reason children are killed. And a journalist, again, talking about how it creates media, I had to delete the entire thread because a journalist contacted me to say they were writing an article about my tweet. And I was like, shut it all down. End it. End it and end me. So that would be the one. That would be one. That would be the one.
Definitely. I do not tweet that often, but when I do, I like make sure it's a banger. There was that one I did at the beginning of the pandemic that they put on a billboard, that Twitter put on a billboard. And like LA about keeping your mask on.
I didn't realize you got a Twitter billboard.
It was bizarre. It was crazy. Makes no sense. They also this is the thing. Twitter does own your shit. They didn't ask me permission. I ask permission for everybody's tweets that I post on SUP unless they're like a big person. But yeah, I just got like tagged one day with like side eyes with like, ooh, look at this.
Oop, you're on a billboard.
Yeah, that would probably, and then my friends started sending it to me. So that would probably be my most valuable. But also I tweeted about anxiety recently. And Elise, two separate people have sent me screenshots of my tweet being referred to in college courses about like mental health and stuff. My anxiety is being studied.
Yeah, and thank God.
I mean, it's good for someone. Please take it and learn.
You never know how far a tweet will go. And it could be a thought that you had about your child-free wedding while pooping on the toilet that you send off. And then you go for a walk and you come back and people think you are a murderer.
I mean, that really is the magic of Twitter, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, there is this, it's just such an interesting sense of like preemptive nostalgia for Twitter that people have suddenly today. I don't know, I'm not convinced that its fundamental nature would change, but it does seem like people are anticipating changes that they feel are so objectionable that they do have to vacate the platform, or they'll feel pressured to. Like we see that with Facebook, but I have appreciated how like Mark Zuckerberg owns Instagram too, but nobody's deleting their Instagram. Like all the woke publications, like we need Instagram. Our entire audience is on Instagram. If we're not on Instagram, we don't have a business.
Yeah, like I was able to delete Facebook because that was the one that was the least relevant to my career and putting stuff out. And honestly, for me, there was just the archive of my life that was on Facebook. I was like, shut it all down. I just can't. Absolutely. I've had this since I was 17. I don't need this. Whereas Instagram, it is a lot easier to look back at your old stuff. They have archives, curate, da da da. That is the place where I have my largest audience to get stuff out. I don't know how I would promote my shows or my work or my writing or anything if I didn't have Instagram. And I think for a lot of journalists and people who write a lot, that is what Twitter is for them. And so mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it really does put them in a crappy position. And I don't begrudge anyone who says, like, I actually can't get rid of Twitter because it's so mm-hmm. tied up in my career and my ability to promote my life, which is kind of just raises the questions of, like, how much these social media companies own us.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was just thinking about, like, I don't know how to cover or experience an election without, like, following all the pollsters on Twitter and seeing who called it. Like,
that's the thing, too, because I don't really feel like I need Twitter in my capacity as a comedian to promote my stuff, really. But as a person who, as in my capacity as one of the co-hosts mm-hmm. of this podcast, in my capacity as the person who writes the newsletter, like, it is actually one of the best and easiest ways to see what's going on, see what people are talking about. I actually have always really liked, I don't even know if it's still called Moments, but
I love Twitter. Yeah, it's well done.
Yeah, their trending news section is really, like, well done as far as roundups of what people are talking about and what's going on.
And it worries me if Elon Musk doesn't like those. Maybe that's on his list and he's like, I think Twitter Moments are prioritizing the wrong voices and we need to make sure to get, you know, fucking American flag Christian dad up there too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just, I mean, it's, we're gonna just have to see.
Yeah, I don't want to catastrophize too much. It's just the concept of this being possible and these people being able, I mean, it's hard, right? Because I think there could be a case to be made that Jeff Bezos owning the Washington Post gives them resources and gives them leeway that they might not otherwise have. Like, they have been able to survive and thrive like most places haven't. Like, the only reason the New York Times can is because they own their building. Like, otherwise they'd be screwed. And yeah, there are other places that have bought up. I mean, there's another billionaire that separately bought the Atlantic, or the Atlantic is part of the Washington Post. There can be, like, benevolent billionaires, notably Mackenzie Bezos, but still the concept of a person being able, having the type of wealth, it's just so broken. It just signifies that it's so broken to amass, somebody that can amass the type of wealth to just, oh, I don't think these companies were designed to be overtaken by a single person. Like, you just never imagine that can happen. It feels like something's shifted.
Yeah, and it just really feels like, you know, these social media platforms were invented. They are private companies. They were invented by individual people. But their influence has become something that is so large that they have sort of become a public good at this point. And so for them to just operate like a normal business with one guy in charge who either is a good person or isn't, or is a good person some days or isn't a good person right. other days, like, that's kind of, it's kind of like having the power grid be operated by just one kind of weird guy, or like our water yeah. or our roads. Right. Like, this has become something that has grown bigger than what a private corporation should really be able to have control over.
Yeah, and it's just we as we've seen, like, there's nothing stopping that from happening. Like, they put up all yeah. the guardrails, but it's still past them, and to me that is very scary. I think I look forward to Katie Porter and AOC absolutely grilling him in regulatory hearings. That I can look forward to.
That I would love to see.
Incredible.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life. And of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
All right, there are so many insane January 6th updates, including more mess in Mark Meadows' text inbox. More. This man, the text he must have, I mean, I think the most recent one that came out, it's like, we're going to talk about the Caitlin and Sammy, but it's 3,000 text messages on top of like the 10,000 I think we've already known about. Most prolific texter.
I really thought that I had a problem with texting, and I just am, the amount of text messages that were received and sent between the election and January 6th, I don't know what my numbers would be, but it's a lot. That, I mean, Mark Meadows texting away.
And when you're texting Elise, you're just like, look at this link. This is crazy. Can you believe this? You're not committing potential crimes of treason when you're texting.
Not really,
Putting them in writing.
I do my crimes on WhatsApp or Wicker. I don't do those in the iMessage.
Marjorie Taylor Greene's reference to martial law, spelled M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L. When I read that, I was at Marshall's and I was trying to think what martial law would be. I think it's that you can't hide things that you want to come back for later. What's yours?
Oh, mine is that it's Eminem is in charge.
Perfect.
That's martial law.
That's martial law. Excellent. Also in these, well, this actually isn't a January 6th related headline. It's just a Donald Trump related headline. But Donald Trump is being held in contempt. I feel like every other week we have like a TK person is being held in contempt and we don't actually know if it's meaningless or it's going to mean something. This one is kind of like TBD, but it might be meaningless. A New York State judge made the move yesterday against Trump because he has failed to comply with a subpoena from the state attorney general's office. Trump will be fined $10,000 a day until he provides those documents. As we know, Trump is fake rich, so Melania better get to selling those NFTs. Might be time.
Yeah, I know. I hope
she can't buy her own anymore.
A couple more. I know, right?
I think you're the one that proposed, and I mean this. I do not mean this in a slut-shamey way. I mean this in a real way. She should sell her nude
as an NFT. She really should.
Absolutely. I think that would absolutely be able
That's
to keep Trump out of court.
That's the least objectionable thing she's ever done, and she can make as much money off of it as she wants. And if she wants to make it an NFT, that might be a good way to support this ruling here.
Support her husband. In announcing this decision, I just liked this. The judge, who's also a justice, said, quote, "Mr. Trump, I know you take your business seriously, and I take mine seriously." Trump's lawyers have claimed that there is no new relevant information to provide. I'm not sure if they're saying we looked for it and we couldn't find it, or they're saying like we've just given you everything you could possibly need. But the state doesn't buy that. And they've asked them to detail how they confirm there are no additional documents. They're like, where'd you look? Why didn't you look? Like, they want to know how they went about this, to be sure. Letitia James has really persisted in demanding information from the Trumps, where a lot of other prosecutors and investigators have just been completely stymied. She has too, but she's pushing through it. And her office has announced it's nearing the end of their inquiry and they're expected to file a lawsuit soon. This specific inquiry relates to the Trump Organization using fraudulent and misleading information and falsely inflating the value of his assets in their annual financial statements, which, of course, is how you get loans. Just a lot of rich people getting loans for doing nothing. Trump has called Letitia James's inquiry into him. I did not know this until I read it this morning. He has called it racially motivated. He thinks she's being racist. Letitia James is black.
Incredible.
I mean, these contempt things are not going particularly far, but I'm curious to see how long he lets this go. I mean, he's not made of money.
Yeah, the thing that's been frustrating, I think, with all of this stuff and like how you mentioned, like people getting held in contempt and subpoenas and all this stuff is that our legal system just moves so slowly on something that is actually so urgent.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting because like, yeah, these things are technically in place to give people the opportunity to not be prosecuted for things they shouldn't be prosecuted for. But in reality,
right,
as we've seen a million times, it's literally just rich people are able to pull all these levers that like the rest of us could never get held in contempt of court, subpoenaed and not show up, fined $10,000 a day, told to appear for a deposition and just not go.
Yeah, I mean, people in Texas aren't getting abortions because they don't have $10,000. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's just like it really, again, like we've been talking about with the Musk stuff, just two sets of rules for the rich and the rest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad we're gonna still have Twitter for the Met Gala. That was my.
That is true, because the theme is Gilded Age.
Oh, incredible!
I'm excited.
I can't wait. I can't wait to tweet it and meme it. I mean, I just saw a tweet referring to 30 to 50 feral hogs. Twitter has really had an influence.
Yeah, I did see a lot of people talking about like what was your favorite day on Twitter, and I do think Feral Hogs Day was up there. That was a really good day.
Mm-hmm. It's still hard for me to imagine how dramatically he could change it, but these changes can also be like slow, and I think people are just anticipating like a slow burn where Twitter is just not, doesn't feel like the place it used to, which is so funny because it's like people that are like, New York was better in the 70s. It's like there were no rules and it was dangerous.
Yeah, it was actually really dangerous.
Like you were
but
getting
Studio
attacked.
But Studio 54 was fun. So yeah, that was fun. There's that.
Sometimes lawlessness is okay. Sometimes when we say it is. That is our show today. We will be back tomorrow. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye-bye.
The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.